So, okay, look, to get really practical, one of the things that I have found over the last few years is when faced with enormous, overwhelming, complex problems that I have no idea how to solve, the best thing to do is to create community around the question. So don't wait to find an answer before you act. Instead, start to ask that question with other people and broaden the groups of people that are asking that question. So it might be after this evening, there is a question that has struck you. Don't wait till you have the answer to act, because you will never have the answer sitting alone trying to find it. And actually, the way to move forward in these complex times is to start to ask those questions in groups, to engage groups of people in that inquiry, and then to experiment with solutions. Don't try and get it right the first time. A lot of the work that I am doing at the moment is helping people understand how to move through complexity. And sometimes I feel that it really is that simple. Ask questions in groups and experiment with answers. So I think that's my kind of simple.
I love that. That's great. I like that.
Yeah, I'll stop there.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Ella. Thank you. I you know, fully agree. It's about small communities. It doesn't have to be many people, but people who are around you, who you love, who you enjoy being with, who share your values. Bring those questions to them, and don't be quickly satisfied with an answer. Holding the question is most of the work. As soon as we think we have an answer, we stop learning. We I know what it is now. And then you go off and do something else. So holding the question is as important as answering it. And trying out many different answers. And I just wanted to remind you that actually the sort of cultural shifts we're talking about do not require, you know, 80% or even the majority of people to be behind them, because many, many people are just somnambulating, going along without really taking in what's happening around them and their role within what's happening around them. And Mao Zedong is a very interesting example. And as he was trying to transform China from a communist state in, quite the opposite, from a very hierarchical state into a communist state, he realized that actually he would only have to persuade about 5 to 6% of the Chinese population. And if he managed to do that, he would make China communist. So what did he do? He began the Great March. And as he moved through towns and cities of China, collecting people along as he went, he managed to create that critical mass of just about 5 to 6% of the Chinese people who really wanted communism to happen. And that was enough for that transformation to take place. So even though we think we're small and insignificant, actually big changes can happen when small groups of people come together and really pursue questions that matter. So it really is possible. It's not something that's beyond our reach. It really is within our reach.
Mm, yeah. And in fact, just to add to that story about Mao Zedong, it was actually a study done by somebody called Chenoweth. I can't remember her first name. Looking at all different movements for liberation over the last century, mostly where there was an oppressive foreign occupier or else some sort of oppressive government, where there was a people's movement that worked and actually managed to get to achieve liberation. What they found was there was a tipping point of 3.5% of when once 3.5% of people within that state or whatever were committed to actually make that shift happen, then that was the sort of distinction point. But there was another very important and interesting element to that. They found that was true only in peaceful movements for liberation, not violent movements for liberation. Which kind of makes sense when you think about it, because you're never going to get that mass group when normal people who aren't violent will look at those kind of extremists out there, whatever, doing that stuff, and will want to stay away. But when normal people who have the same values that Jerome was describing, that we all have, that hunter-gatherers had for all of human history, and that we have in ourselves too, when they see a wrong, and when they feel that, and enough people grow a movement into that, that makes tremendous change. And we can see, and what I was thinking of when you said that, we see that right now in movements, for example, like the hashtag MeToo movement, where we saw an oppressive, you know, it's one of the most entrenched oppressive structures that arose with agriculture 12,000 years ago or so, like of patriarchy, suddenly showing some fissures, suddenly showing some cracks. When people would say, oh, that guy Weinstein, nobody could ever touch him. Suddenly he's he's actually taken away and arrested for criminal acts. And similarly, we see that in so many things. There's so many areas where things we've said will never happen in our lifetimes just happen. Same-sex marriage, another great example. Our friends in California who are now married, who thought they would never in their lives actually be able to be legally married. We see that again and again in different places. There's like a non-linearity of change. And that's something that we can really gain a lot of excitement about and strength from. But one of the things we need to do is to shift. A lot of these changes happen in cultural norms. And what we need to do is focus our attention on shifting those to some of the economic norms, where essentially the big transnational corporations have like a stranglehold over power and over even nation states. And I think the more we become aware of that, and as grassroots organizations, grassroots people connecting around the world say, that's not acceptable, that is, in my view, the key to really shifting the trajectory of our future.